And it is so sweet when you see the foals out in the paddock, you know, and they go, wow, I have legs, look at me, I can do all these things. And then they go, God, I'm pooped, and they just crash. They come in here. I saw one of them the other day just had his head stuffed underneath the hay. Like, you know, don't talk to me, I'm exhausted, I can't take her long.
I'm the Wine Tipster, and welcome to my podcast, serving up the very best in racing food and drinks. This brand new podcast is being released the week of the Craven meeting, which is the opening fixture of Newmarket's annual racing calendar. And I'm delighted that for the first episode, we're here in Newmarket itself, the home of flat racing. I love it here. There's so much to do. Firstly, we headed off to the National Stud to meet their CEO, Anna Kerr. I think Anna's great. She's got a brilliant reputation. She's very passionate and so respected in our sport. But also, she's got a great taste in food and wine, which you will hear about. I'm also delighted to say we met Stradivarius and the other stallions. I mean, what a treat and experience that was too. And you're going to love hearing about that. And you may wonder why you next hear from Emma Godivala, co-founder of York Gin. What could be the connection between York Gin and the National Stud? Well, you'll find out about that. And we brought ourselves back down to Newmarket to meet Tracy Harding, chief exec of Discover Newmarket. And as ever, Tracy is passionate and enthusiastic and just telling you how much there is to do in Newmarket across a whole array of experiences. For those of you who haven't been to Newmarket before, come and visit. For those of you been lots of times, we know you're going to come back. Enjoy the pod, everybody. Cheers.
These are all the pregnant mares being brought in for dinner. So they'll be turned out in the mornings, usually about 7:30, and they are out in all of the paddocks around the foaling unit. And they're monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, constantly being watched for any signs that they might be going into labour or water's breaking. We're just showing those signs of coming close to foaling, which we'd all be watching for.
What time is it now? About 4:30 they're coming in for
their... They're coming in for their evening feed.
Yeah.
And you see them, I mean, they literally start queuing up at the gate going, because horses are just such creatures of routine and habit. And you see they're kind of going, right, we're hungry.
Yes.
You know, we've only been eating hay and grass all day, so we want something different. So they'll come in. This is a filly foal by Stradivarius, and she was born on the 22nd March, so she was born 3 days ago.
Oh.
And you'll see on the board here, it has what they have for breakfast, what they have for dinner, and then what paddock they're turned out into and for how long. Usually when it's sunny, they find that little sunspot and they go for a big snooze.
Oh, this is...
You know, and it's just magic.
I'm almost, you know, this is not the right time to be speechless. And it's unusual for me to be speechless. You do loads of stuff. This is just brilliant.
I know. How lucky are we that this is what we can walk out the door and see?
So who are your two favourite mares?
Sacred Valley, who is by Le Havre, and I'm quite besotted with her. And then they all tease me.
Oh, look. Now, so you've just come to this gate. So how many, what have we got? We've got one, two,
four. Four mares and foals in here.
Yeah.
You can see there on the left, that's Cardiff and her colt foal by Cracksman.
Oh, wow. So who's coming to see us now?
Can you see their markings are the same, but the opposite ways around? So this is Pachelbel and her foal by Stradivarius. And this is everybody's favorite foal because she's just so sweet. She's absolutely gorgeous.
Because she's got this white marking right down the centre, hasn't she?
So. Yeah.
Oh, she's really gorgeous.
Pretty. It's really fun.
So pretty, these two.
Yeah. And every
mum and foal.
And exactly that reason. She always comes trotting up. Hello.
Just, yeah.
Are you here to see me?
Yes. Yeah, so you want the
attention. They're the welcoming committee.
So how old is the foal?
This foal will be 3.5 to 4 weeks old. And it is so sweet when you see the foals out in the paddock. You know, and they go, wow, I have legs, look at me, I can do all these things. And then they go, God, I'm pooped. And they just completely crash. They come in here and they're generally, I saw one of them the other day just had his head stuffed underneath the hay. Like, you know, don't talk to me, I'm exhausted, I can't take her along.
I envy you your job because you can walk out and do this, you know. I think I'm going to relocate to the National Stud.
Well, we have offices upstairs. You do very well.
Oh, great.
It's going to be your new market base.
Well, I love it. I love that idea. I'm on.
We're very lucky because we'd be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, boarding farm in the UK.
Yeah.
So we get to see such a cross-section of sires of what, and just to see their stock and what different bowls are like and that kind of thing. So we're very fortunate in that way, but that's always very exciting.
Just talking about, because obviously we're here now in March, then just thinking about more foals coming along, and then what date would you be talking about the yearling sales? So when would they be?
So sales prep will start mid-July.
Yeah.
And then depending on which sale they're going to, the Doncaster sales are at the end of August.
Okay.
Then the Somerville sale is at the beginning of September. Okay. And then Tats Book 1, 2, 3 is at the beginning of October. So with the Ark, the first Sunday in October, Book 1 starts the next day. This is Hugo, our teaser.
Oh, Hugo. Hello. Hello, mate.
He is an absolute dude, this guy. So he came from Clapham. So teaser checks the mare before the stallion goes in to ensure that she's in season and receptive to the stallion before he comes into the covering shed. Our teasers do cover our foster mares, and so we do actually breed from them. He's just an absolute dude, isn't he?
He's small, but he's mighty.
Yeah. And he's so brave when he's going into the shed as well. He really, yes, I'm here.
He's having a few mints at the moment, by the way. He's having a good time.
Yeah.
Aren't you?
His life is quite different now to the life he led in Clapham. But he left the city and has come to his country abode. And I don't think he can believe where he's landed.
Well, it would be great to interview him, really.
Yeah, it would. And it's funny because he and Bradsell arrived the same week.
Yeah.
And were really good pals. So this is Loki Fernandez. He is his first 2-year-old runners this year.
Yes.
102 2-year-olds to run for him.
Wow.
With trainers such as John Gosden, Ray Feckett, Eve Johnson Houghton, Richard Fahey.
Well, that's good to look forward to.
We're very excited for him, aren't we, Dave?
Yeah.
This is Raji Singh, who we call the strike rate king. So he has a phenomenal strike rate of winners to runners. In each crop, his strike rate of winners to runners is over 50%, and his cumulative strike rate is 67% winners to runners. He's the best value stallion that you'll find in the UK, and he's the kindest horse. So kind.
He's lovely. He's lovely, isn't he?
He's the slobberiest one.
What's the maximum they will cover in a day?
Four.
That will be it, yeah.
So this is your pal.
I love Stradivarius.
Now, Strad is very particular about his polos. He actually loves Tribor Extra Strongmint, but he will also eat polos.
Hello, gorgeous. Now, I'm mad about Stradivarius. I've been wanting to meet you because I've seen you race so many times and I love your attitude. And I also just have to say, I love 2-milers. What you did has been great. Been absolutely fantastic. And he looks very pleased with himself, doesn't he?
Dean, nobody has more charisma and personality than this horse. He is genuinely, you don't even have to say anything when you bring breeders to see him because he shows himself so beautifully. He has the most phenomenal walk. If you look at him over the box here, as we're looking at him now, and all of that racing, look how clean Lindy is. He doesn't have a mark on him. He never missed a racing engagement. He just oozes male charisma. I mean, he gets rather cross if you talk to another stallion. He's a bit, when you come around the other side of the unit and say hi to Bradsell first, he's not best pleased with that. He can do a death stare.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. I bet when he walks in a bar, it's a bit like, hey, I'm here. Yeah.
You know that song, You Got Another Shot of Whiskey? You know, that's our theme song for Strad. Dave comes in the morning at 6:30 to give them their breakfast, and each of them are kind of different. But Strad usually goes in, leans his head in for a quick cuddle before he then has his brekkie, but he does everything first. So he's on the walker first. He's turned out first when the stallions are turned out. So he knows where everyone is then. He can monitor. But you can see why he was such a good racehorse.
He's got tremendous presence.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love as well.
And he could just cruise and cruise and cruise and then go.
There we go. Yeah.
He was just so exciting to watch. But the day he arrived here and he came off the box and all of the other stadiums, their eyes were out in sticks going, who the hell is this guy, you know? He's been fascinating. He's a really interesting horse. And we're so excited. He had 120 mares year one, 101 year two, and we'll cover between 80 and 100 this year. So over 220 mares in his first 2 books, which is brilliant. But as I say, people came to see him out of curiosity.
Yes.
So once they saw him, and he's perfect as he stands. You know, he's neat. He's strong, deep, really good hind quarter, phenomenal walk. And then again, that presence. And he'd look at you, you know, you want to use me. Yeah, so we did actually have a birthday party. Of course we did. A couple of weeks ago, because Brad Sell and Stradivarius, actually, their birthdays are quite close together.
Okay.
So we got them some carrot bouquets. And, you know, if you look on our Instagram, you'll see.
And last but not least, next door to Strad was Brad Sell, a little pocket rocket and so sweet.
He's a baby of Aikamara's. He's only five. Is such a kind horse, this horse. Nothing phases him. He is so cool. Yeah. He literally hasn't turned a hair since he arrived. Yeah. And he's so snoozy because it's really busy days, isn't it? So he's covering 2 or 3 miles a day at the moment. Yeah, he'll cover about 130 miles. And absolutely entitled to.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah. And he loves his ears being scratched. That's something people might not know about, brother.
Hello, mate.
But again, like his race record, do you know, I mean, the Nunthorpes are flying 5, 2nd in the Abbey on unsuitable ground, 2 Ascot wins, so the Coventry and the King's Stand. One of the most interesting things we do here is the transition from racehorse to stallion. And you see such a change in them over the 18 months, both physically and mentally. And he has just been... He's such a kind horse, but he's so relaxed. And you can see why he was able to come back from those injuries. Yeah, horses with a good mind, we all know the difference that makes.
3 of us are stroking him now.
Yeah.
He's still a bit like, that's fine. We're getting another minute.
He's just going.
I'm just going to hear another minute. You know, I'm happy. Thanks very much indeed. Life is good.
You know, we were going to look at these stallion prospects and you go, you're driving down going, please be nice, please be nice, please be nice. Because it's, you know, what we're doing is we're selling to breeders. We get the confirmation and all that kind of thing. And I walked around the corner. I said, oh God, he's gorgeous. But they said, I said, does he like polos? Because that's pretty important for life at the National Stud. And they said, yes, we bought him a big box for winning the Nunthorpe, but he's eaten them all already. So he's a beauty.
Just tell me about Breeders Club, because I was just reading about this.
So our Breeders Club, we launched at the end of last year. We've bought 2 mares at the December sales, Ocean Paradise and Hot Flush.
Okay.
And each member of the Breeders Club has a 1% share in each mare and all resulting progeny. So Ocean Paradise is in foal to Pinatubo, and she's going to visit Bradsell.
Oh,
and Hot Flush is in foal to Cameco.
Yes.
And she's going to visit Lepi Fernandez this year. So it's very, very exciting.
That is very exciting.
It's only mares in partnership with us at the National Stud. And we do a combination of visits here to the stud. So everyone's already been at the beginning of the year to meet the mares. And they'll be coming back when they've both fell down to see them again. We then have a race day party in July, Cup race day. So pre-racing picnic. And then we'll do a visit to the yearling sales, and we're also going to a trainer's yard. It's quite a social thing.
Which is great. Well. Which is good and important.
Yeah. There are 2 mares that I think have really good prospects. Ocean Paradise is already the dam of 2 winners, and Hot Flush is a little younger, but she has a 2-year-old in training with Richard Fahey. So the mares are good prospects to continue improving. Breeding is hard, you know, it's tough to trying to carry it all yourself. So actually, if you can do it in a group with other people, it just spreads the risk, and it also makes it a bit more fun.
I think it makes a lot. Sounds like a lot of fun. Thinking about fun,
yes.
So let's have a think about your favourite wine.
I do like a Macon Looney.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Good. I could have some Macon Looney now, really.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good choice.
Is that a good choice?
I like it. Well, I think
I was quite nervous about getting that wrong too.
Well, no. I'm not. Look, I just think, look, so just for Chardonnay, 100% Chardonnay. I love Chardonnay. Anybody part of the ABC club, the Anything But Chardonnay club, rip up the membership and get involved with Chardonnay.
I know, it's a total fad, guys. It's over. You need to move on.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. That's it. So there was a summary from Anna about Chardonnay, and you need to move on and get involved with Chardonnay. So Burgundy, white Burgundy and Mâconnais. I love Macon Looney. I think it's the wine you just go, it's Friday night. Is it Macon Looney Day? It is now.
It is.
So we're going to do Macon Looney Day. So have a good white Burgundy
I find it, that's often, I always have a Macon Loon in the fridge. I just think it's great. I just think it's one of those wines, sometimes just, it's a big mood wine person. You come back and you think, I just want to have something that just makes you feel really good. And it's easy drinking. That's the wine choice.
There was a lot of pressure on that, I'm not going to lie.
What are you going to eat? What are you going to eat? Desert Island Dinner, yes.
Oh, Desert Island Dinner, Jeannie Mac, okay.
Jeannie Mac?
That's just going to sound so boring. But actually, just a really nice roast chicken salad.
That's not boring at all.
A proper rotisserie roast chicken.
Yes.
With a little bit of coleslaw, a little bit of avocado, maybe some red chicory, and a good sourdough bread. That would be nice for me.
I think that sounds great. We're going somewhere now, actually. We're going to have both of those. But before we do that, favourite racehorse?
Oh, of all time, See the Stars. I know that's probably a predictable and boring response, but he was a yearling at the Irish National Stud when I was doing the course there. And then when I was working at Leopardstown, he won his 2-year-old Stakes horse. And I was talking to Mick Cannon in the parade ring afterwards, and he said, this horse is going to win everything next year. So I duly went out and backed him anti-post.
So my name's Emma. I'm one of the founders of York Gin, which is obviously a gin based in York. So we've been distilling here since 2018 with a logo and a motto, which is history in the tasting. So we base all our products around either the history of the spirits or gin and the history of York. And York is replete with history and fantastic things. So
just talk us through your favourite gins and your best-selling gins. And also, I know you've done a little bit of work on flavours as well.
We don't have masses of different gins. We have about 6 core gins. And as I said, we like to make sure that they are really reflective of quality and of York itself. So we have a London Dry gin, which is beautiful. And it's a kind of gin that you might recognise if you were time travelled from sort of 200 years ago. You'd recognise it as a classic gin. We didn't want it to make it surprising or weird. It should reflect York, which is very historic. So that's kind of our core one. And it's made in a still called Ebor, which is named after Eboracum, which is the Roman name for York, because it's a Roman city as well as a Viking city, as well as a chocolate city and a train city and a racing city. So we have lots of lovely connections. And then I have an Old Tom gin, which is another style of gin, is our most awarded gin. It's been nominated as the best Old Tom at least a couple of years going at the World Gin Awards, and it has the highest scores ever sometimes at the International Wine and Spirits Competition. So we're very proud of that one. And that one we'd make in collaboration with Andrew Pern, who's a Michelin starred chef. It's one of those things where I wanted to make an Old Tom gin, but you need a syrup that goes in it. And the syrup has white rose of Yorkshire in it, has star anise and beautiful things from the garden. And you definitely want a Michelin starred person to make your syrups, because it just brings that extra level of quality. Yeah, they're all really popular. It's like trying to choose your favourite child. It's almost, you know, it's like you have one, but you don't let anyone know. yeah, we do a range. We do some red ones as well. So we have a Yorkshire rhubarb one. So forced rhubarb is a delicacy up here in Yorkshire, the rhubarb triangle. That's a really popular one. People do like a pink coloured gin, even though a traditional pink gin, if you have gin listeners, well, people will know you make that with Angostura bitters, not with bright fruit flavours. So it's a real mix. Yeah, the Old Tom is probably the sort of consumer favourite, along with another one as well we have called Roman Fruit, which is strawberries and raspberries and apple and hibiscus. It's a deep emperor red colour, and it's a popular one.
I have to say, right now, I love hibiscus, by the way. Right now, I'd just like to be tasting that gin. I've got a funny feeling I've already tasted this gin at some point, actually. But it's interesting, just in terms of flavours, isn't it? Because there's a lot of gins now, we have all these different flavours and stuff. And some of them, I've got to say, they're not my bag. But I love the idea of rhubarb as well. I just think that's a great idea. And something that really appeals to me. And also, just in terms of colour, and just putting my wine hat on for a moment here, people love pink. They love rosé, don't they, right now?
They do. There's a definite appeal of just anything pink or red. And people assume they're going to be sweet. And funny enough, one of our gin, the Roman Fruit, isn't very sweet. You need to add it to a cocktail or a Negroni or something to sweeten it up. But it has a real eye appeal. I agree with you.
Yeah. I'm just planning ahead here, okay? When I next come to York, what am I going to do? I'm going to come and taste all the gins. But what about, actually, you've got some new stuff, haven't you? I think you can come and make your own gins now. Can you do that?
You can. Thank you, Neil. Yes, you can. We've had a beautiful shop in York for about 7 years now, right in the middle of town, a beautiful Tudor building. Just around the corner, we finally managed to open a little city centre sort of boutique distillery. So it's not where we're going to make all our gins. It's just not big enough. But you can come and where we're going to do all our flavour development. And it won't just be gins. We could also do other spirits there. And also, yes, please visit because you can make your own gin. You can choose your own botanicals. You can even pick some from our little garden outside. And we will guide you through the process and you end up with a bottle of your own. It could be Neil the Tipster's gin.
I love the sound of that. I'm on the train now. But in actual fact, just on botanicals then, because there's a couple of key botanicals, aren't there? So what are they?
So if you want to make gin, you have to have juniper in it. There's your key botanical. It's what the name gin comes from. It's the Dutch word for juniper. It gives you the gin part of the name. So if it hasn't got juniper in it, it ain't gin. And generally, people tend to put coriander, angelica in an orris root. They tend to be your sort of core ones. After that, you will do oyster a little bit. You can put in some things that are utterly delicious, like forced rhubarb or cocoa nibs or something like that. But you have to be careful because distillation is very much what you put in, what you get out. So if you put in something beautiful, you will get a more intense version of that. If you put something in that's a little bit, I don't know, sour or a little bit too much of something, people can be a bit heavy-handed with the old cardamom, I find, which is a wonderful seed and it has amazing flavours. But you put too much in and that's all you're tasting.
I'm very heavy-handed, by the way, so this could go really...
Oh, okay. I'll watch it when you're cooking.
That's going to be a bit of a disaster, but it'd be interesting. No, I'd love to do that. Now, I'm interested here with this racing link as well about Stradivarius, because Stradivarius, he's now obviously at the National Stud, as I said, but also he won 3 Yorkshire Cups as well, and over in 2018, 2019 and 2022. Now, I know you're a big fan of racing. One of the things about Stradivarius for me is because he's won over distances of 1.5 mile, 6 furlongs, heading up to 2.5 miles. And Stradivarius is just, still is a very public horse, but he's really engaged people with thinking about that sort of length of distance for a flat race. And the fact he could come back year after year has been fantastic for racing. You came up with an idea around Stradivarius and just explain what that was.
Okay, yes, yeah, so it was really just a celebration of a horse that everyone was getting very excited about seeing. And it was definitely the buzz of the race meet. So we wanted to celebrate a little bit, do something a little bit special. So creating a special bottle in the colours. We even had sort of fun ones. We had a little hat on top as well, which was rather cute. So we did all sorts of things. I mean, then we also had some special bottles which had been engraved. We can do that now as well for you. So we can engrave a special bottle, especially if you come and make one with us. So it was really fun. It's nice to have something to celebrate, doing something physical and something bespoke, because you wouldn't do it. It's a one-off.
As you say, representing the silks, but love the history, obviously with London Dry as well, always some history with your gins, but also it just looks absolutely fantastic. And I know you have a sort of digital marketing background and very creative, and I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant idea. And I'm very proud to have maybe one of these very few London Dry York gins Stradivarius edition, I have to say. And it's just it's a great link because he's a fantastic horse and what he achieved on the course, but what he's achieving at stud now, he's pretty cool, really. Let's just put it that way. Now, one of the things, Emma, just before you go, one of the things I'd like you to do is tell me about your favourite drink and also your favourite style of food as well.
Obviously, I'm going to have to say it's gin, even though I'm talking to the wine tipster. I can be a bit of a purist, though. Actually, what I drink regularly is what's called a Ricky, a gin Ricky, which is soda water with gin and lime. And the good thing about that is you really just get the taste of the gin coming through, but it's still a long drink. So no tonic. It's actually so if you've got a very good quality gin, I recommend it because you're just going to taste that. And also, just on a naughty day, I quite like a Gibson martini as well.
Me too.
I do like tapas. I like a variety, and it's small portions, and you can try lots of things without being overwhelmed. And it's really good to have little different small drinks to go with each tapa. So you can live large, but keep it small.
I love that. I've sold on both of those choices, by the way. I love it. Yes, I have to say, I've just got back into tapas. You know, I started my career actually off in a Spanish wine company. But I love that whole experience. I mean, I'm into those smaller plates and everything at the moment. And I agree with you. Must have a drink with everyone.
It's a classic, is gin. It is one of the most versatile spirits out there. It pairs so nicely with so much stuff that it's a classic. So you'll find it in your Negronis and you find it in your Rickies, and you find obviously the G&T is the quintessential cocktail. I mean, it is a cocktail as a G&T. But you also now, because there's been such a market explosion, you do have a really good variety of mixes of the tonics.
What about tonics?
So tonics... So there's a dog, I'm afraid. So, yeah, so tonics, we partner with Fevertree because there has been, they were a bit of pioneers where they took down the amount of the sugar. They were very good at reducing sugar but not putting sweeteners in. So it has less sugar. It has been said, I think it's a well-made product, and they created a nice selection. I also just honestly would recommend people do try things like a plain soda, because you have sometimes, especially if you're buying a premium product, which I won't shy away from, ours is not a cheap one, you want to taste what you've bought. So I would recommend trying things, and always try things neat, just a tiny bit on tip of your tongue, around the side of your tongue first, just because then you'll also know what you'd like to pair it with, because everybody's got a slightly different palate. So you can, you know, you can decide, oh, I can get in the lemon, or I'm getting the pepper, or I'm getting things. And you can say, actually, this would go really nicely with something else. And you can't really make the wrong choice. You can put too much of the thing and sort of water it down too much, in my view. You can always add more tonic, or you can always add more soda, but start slowly, see where you lie.
I love what you're doing. I love the history of York Gin. I love your gins. And like, yes, folks, I have tasted most of the gins from York Gin. I look forward to coming up to doing a bit of botanical blending and keeping control, really, I think, is what I'm going to go there.
You'll be fine. We're experts. We will make sure that you're not heavy-handed. We have lovely scales, and you'll be able to not go too far either way.
I look forward to that. But I have done a bit of blending of wine. You think I will be able to get some balance across the botanicals, right?
Excellent.
Great stuff. Emma, thanks so much for being on. It's great to have you on the Wine Tipster podcast, and we'll catch up very soon. Cheers.
Lovely to talk to you.
So here we are. I'm having a great time in Newmarket. I'm delighted to say I'm meeting Tracy Harding once again, Chief Executive of Discover Newmarket. Now, Tracy, I'm interested because you've done a lot of work in tourism and attracting businesses to different cities, haven't you? How long have you been involved in Newmarket for?
So I joined in 2019. So great start. Thought this was going to be an amazing job with lots of champagne drinking or the racing, and lockdown happened, I think, literally 4 months later.
Yeah.
So we offered private tours for the very first time, and they were so popular that now private experiences outweigh our public experiences.
Interesting, isn't it?
So, and if it hadn't been for COVID, we'd never actually have known that, I don't think. So it's been a learning curve. I've just been fascinated by it. Honestly, I just can't believe, even though I knew they did do amazing guided experiences, and I've been on a few, to be fair, I'm absolutely bowled over by how Newmarket works together and the offer here. I mean, to say that, I think the USP, unique selling point, is a overused word, but yeah, it's so relates to Newmarket. It really does.
And I sense that, you know, using the word relish, you came in and thought, well, great, this is a fantastic challenge. And you've got loads of energy. I know that. I've met you loads of times, Tracy, and I love it. I love the fact you're just really going for it all the time. You know, because one of the things for me is I just want people to come racing. And I've spoken to race goers at Newmarket. It could have been the champs going to a restaurant, for example. They say, we're down here for 3 days. And I think, great, you're down here for 3 days. You might do 1 or 2 days of racing, or say even longer. And what else are you going to do? And I've always felt it's really underrated here, the whole experience. And I think that's something I know you've really got hold of as well.
Yeah, so Discover Newmarket is fundamentally a not-for-profit tourism organisation. So we're here to support that visitor economy, to work with the accommodation providers, the eateries, experience, the attractions, and promote and showcase all that Newmarket has to offer to everybody. But obviously, of course, racing is at the core of everything you do. But I think coming from outside the horse racing industry, as myself, my message really is to everybody is you don't have to be interested in horse racing to find certainly the guided tours that we do and the National Horse Racing Museum, which is obviously open all year round.
Yeah.
Because the history, the stories, the royal connections, meeting actual physical horses yourself and getting up close to them, the views. I mean, standing at the top of the gallops, that's an iconic view. And so you don't have to be interested in racing or follow racing to find that interesting, relevant, exciting, thrilling. The story, you don't know who you're ever going to see. It might be a trainer. It might be just, you know, work rider that's, you know, well known. You just don't know. But everybody wants to engage and retain you in the industry, and they want to tell you. So they're quite happy for you to ask the daft questions, as I've done lots of times. Yeah. And I think you can drive around Newmarket and have no idea that we've got, you know, 70-odd training yards, because they're just all hidden. And when you go down the driveways, there's this oasis of paddocks and stables. And I just don't think people realise.
I agree with that. And actually, think about the number of horses in Newmarket. It's an incredible experience to see that the horse dominates. And that is one thing which I love. Just coming back a bit, actually, just about, you know, we talk about getting younger people in racing. How do you think we can get younger people to come and get involved in that kind of thing as a group? Or is that, does that work? Or is it much more of being part of a family thing?
No, I mean, again, it's all about experiences, and the younger generation do seem to have that available money and time. And I think our package tours are just what you want. You pick your date, pick your tour, bish bash, gone. And you've got a timetable, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and doing this, and doing this. Is a day. They don't just want to get out of bed for an hour. They're things talking about the whole day. So I think the whole experience that the guided tours can offer here in Newmarket, I think is fantastic. And of course, we do tours that relate to racing as well. We involve a visit to the races. And then the add-on for going to Discover Newmarket is that we do behind-the-scenes tours. You can go with a guide who are all ex-industry, who are just such lovely people, and they will take you to the parade ring.
Yeah.
In fact, they will take you into the parade ring, into the weighing room, if you're at the Rolling Mall, into the Royal Box, commentary box. Yeah. And then they can tell you what a race card is, how to read it, and just literally show you all around the race course. And they just provide the overview. You then have the confidence, I think, to take your friends and family and come again.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Because I think putting my, you know, as you know, I'm in wine a bit. But one of the things for me with wine, we can make wine seem very complicated. We can make wine seem very distant. And I always think there's been this parallel with racing. People get given a 500 wine list. It takes me about 40 minutes to read it. And I do talk a lot. I go silent for 40 minutes. It's quite extraordinary. But the thing, I think that's so important. And there's something about people going to parade rooms, and maybe further down the line, they might get a syndicate, for example. I love syndicates because it does bring that piece in. But all those different elements you're doing there, I think, is great, because we have to make it easier, more accessible. Actually, it is amazing, though, because you're talking about number of trainers. You just, when you, I remember the first time I came to Newmarket, I was going, I couldn't believe that you're just going, you've got trainers next to each other, everything like that. It feels like one of those programs where they go, they're talking about properties, and you go on the street, you go, that's so-and-so's property, this is the X's property, whatever. And I bet people are really gobsmacked by that.
I mean, we go to obviously the small trainers, medium size, and the big boys. So, you know, William Haggis, Mark, Gosden's. I mean, they're so supportive, but they get it. They understand that they need to let people just experience it and see it, and how excited we as normal people are to be able, you know, it's a privilege. It's a huge privilege to go on to the gallops. We don't forget that. We know how privileged and breathtaking it is. I mean, it is. What other sport takes you to that level, so you can have a conversation and say, you know, what's your next big rising star? Who's going to win at the weekend? How are you training for such and such? And actually go, and they answer you. You know, they're not the brushing off to a PR agent. They're standing there and they're telling you stuff that, you know, you're not seeing on Google.
No.
This is real deal stuff. And again, people just hang on every word. Just, you know, fantastic. Fantastic.
That's great. And I love that, because that's just, it's like, and it's also like for me, the different gallops, because people just want to understand why certain trainers are using particular gallop and everything like that, which I find fascinating. And a couple of, just around trainers as well, because I really like the fact, you know, going to the smaller trainers as well, which I think is really good.
The smaller trainers will be there and take the tour. So you've got the opportunity to ask the questions that you wouldn't email in and ask. And we know we've had successes with that. So we've taken people to the smaller yards, and they've seen it and thought, you know, I'd like to come here more regularly. This is a nice vibe. I like that trainer who seems to be talking sense. And they want to invest.
I think that's really important as well, because it has to be a playground for everybody, and you're really doing that. Well, I just a couple of the questions. The Royal Connection. Talk about the Royal Connection, because you mentioned that earlier.
So actually, we are sitting in the tack room in Newmarket, and we are being looked down by Palace House, And it is called Palace House, funnily enough, because it is a palace. And I say that because I just have so many people don't realise that. So that was Charles II's home. This, where we're looking at in the courtyard, that is where his royal stables would have been. So a whole royal residence, and I think an awful lot of people don't realise the significance of that. And I think we forget that. We forget the importance of it historically, and that's why racing began here. But also the fact that we have royal visitors frequently going back to the 1600s, up until today, and certainly the late Queen Elizabeth II was a regular visitor here. And of course, there were some public visits, but a lot were under the radar. She loved her horses. So she had three royal trainers here. So she would visit them regularly. It meant a lot to her. And honestly, we've been very blessed with having a visit prior so far from Queen Camilla.
Yeah.
So horses are still really important, that royal story.
Great with Queen Camilla, seeing how positive she is and how proactive she is. And also what I think is really great, because I'm going to do this for the National Horse Racing Museum. You've got your racing game exhibition, Horse Bay. It's on. I'm getting involved.
So this is the new one for this year, running until the end of the year. So plenty of time to visiting. The exhibition's an unusual one for us, actually, because we normally concentrate on art. So we've had some amazing exhibitions with artists, well-known artists. But this one is all about horse racing board games. It's difficult to say. I haven't had any wine. So it's about over 50 games. So it tells a story from games in the very early days. So it would all have been about playing dice, then cards, then moving on to the boards. So it's a bit nostalgic because you'll be looking back at some of those games.
Escalado. I love Escalado.
There's lots of games in the actual exhibition room. There's a track. So you can be interactive with the exhibition. So you'll roll a dice, compete against your friends, family, learn more about the games that are in the exhibition, but also the strategy about games. So there's the thinker, the cheater, the one who gets bored, the one who has to win, competitive. It's a really interesting look into the board games, but it is interactive. So it's quite fun, which obviously is about all about racing. So it connects, fantastically.
When people come to want to come to the racing game exhibition, Horseplay,
just turn up. Remember, it's a full day out at the museum, so allow plenty of time.
I'll be playing Escalado for about 5 hours, I reckon. But now, let's just before you go. So, what would be your favourite drink?
So it has to be, and this is not just because we're in the tack room, but this particular Romanian rosé is absolutely amazing.
Sandiana, okay. Romanians do some great stuff. And then what about food?
On a menu, I would always go for the fish. It's usually sea bass on the menu, I have to say, which is absolutely fine by me.
Okay. We were talking about Coley earlier. And favourite racehorse? Difficult one.
Ooh. Oh, it has to be Frankel, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely has to be Frankel.
When you're working sometimes and you just think, I need to have 5 minutes to do something else, just watch Frankel and the 2000 Guineas. Is it just space? You just lie, feel very, very good. What an immense performance. Hey, Tracy, thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure.
Great to talk to you as ever. See you soon. And great job with Discover Newmarket. You have been listening to the Wine Tipster podcast. Don't forget to follow the podcast for all new episodes and follow at The Wine Tipster on social media. Join us again soon for more racing, food and drinks chat. Cheers.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.